Our second speaker is Catherine Young. She's an associate principal of Kinsey & Company out of the Chicago office, but located in Seattle. It's a very long commute. She has been at Kinsey & Company since 2003 and working with several major sectors, social sector, consumer packaged goods, and agribusiness. Her real passion is the building of mechanisms to link smallholder farmers to sustainable market opportunities, and has worked in a number of areas of the world, including Africa, south of the Sahara, Asia, and Latin America. She's also involved in exploring innovative partnerships and building strategies for long-term investments. Catherine has a master's in public policy from the University of Chicago and a bachelor's degree in Spanish and honors political science from Kenyon College. Catherine.
Good morning, everyone. Really excited to be here. As Doug was saying, this is an area that's very close to my heart. I spend my time at McKinsey mainly splitting between agribusiness and the social sector because of the linkages you've already discussed both today and yesterday. And I've found throughout that process that this is just it's such a critical area for investment. I'm putting these facts up on the board not because you guys don't know them. All of you know how critical agriculture is to both the world and to the and to the people I need. The reason I put this up is sort of to explain my own personal call to action. When I first started at McKinsey many years ago, I did mostly agriculture and agribusiness work, and we were asked by the Gates Foundation to help them think through whether it made sense to invest in agriculture. And in the process, we came across facts such as this, you know, the fact that 70% of agricultural output must rise in the next 40 years. The last 10,000 years of historical food production must be matched in the next 40 years. The demands on agriculture are colossal. The needs of people, 2 billion people that will be added to the planet, 3 billion more demanding high quality foods, the needs are just extreme. So when we started talking about this to the Gates Foundation and realized how many people were dependent on agriculture, we really convinced ourselves. Started the social sector at McKinsey and started to invest in agriculture as a social need, not just a private sector need. So specifically in agriculture, the work we do at McKinsey is focused on three types of transformation models in agriculture. The first is value chain interventions. I focused most of my time there. That's really thinking about how to get private sector investment into industry gaps to capture value and stimulate growth. The second is infrastructure corridors, thinking about concentrated regional approach to investing in infrastructure. So, for example, developing a corridor in Ghana, in the northern Ghana, which creates a breadbasket for rice investments, both from the private, social, and public sector. And finally, policy facilitation. So, for example, we worked with the Ethiopian government to develop a long-term agricultural growth strategy. So specifically, what I want to talk to you today is my main focus area, which is the value chain efforts. You've already heard how critical private sector investment is in this area, so I won't dwell on that point. The fact is you need partnerships to make it happen. The good news is everybody's excited about this. Both the private sector is very interested, and the social sector is very excited. And they're actually looking for more and more opportunities for partnership. The challenge is what models to use. In our work in the field, we found that they most frequently, there's certain types of partnerships which I'll talk to you about on the next slide, but there's certain types of partnerships which groups most frequently engage in. They have some real advantages, mostly that they focus directly on smallholder access, so you know the benefit is getting to the right people, but also that they have long-term global reach. You can actually do them in many places. The real issue is sustainability. How do we make sure that these models extend over time? So We have some institutions that I've been working with, and actually Syngenta Foundation mentioned one of them, have been exploring an integrated private sector-led model. The good news here is you get more sustainability and efficiency. The bad news is you have a little bit more challenges in terms of making sure you get to the right people that you're trying to affect, making sure that you can monitor it, making sure the economics work so it's sustainable, and actually finding the right private sector entrepreneurs that can make these things happen. So what do I mean by this? Most of the private sector partnerships we've seen in the field focus on one or the other end of the value chain. So you look at the value chain, you start with the inputs, and you go all the way down to the distribution of goods at the end. We see lots of private sector partnerships in R&D, which is fantastic. You know, that was already mentioned this morning. Lots of collaboration, lots of, you know, co-investment in new seeds, improved technologies, new fertilizers. That's great. We also see a lot of coordination on the other end of the spectrum. Coordinating demand sinks. So going to a company like Walmart and saying, hey, if we train these farmers, will you buy their production? You know, supporting the financial, you know, giving finance to processors and other private sector players to make sure that they're able to invest and grow. Also very good. The problem is you don't see as much happening in the center. You see very little happening with the input distribution, getting that innovations out in the field. No, Dr. Henley already mentioned that this morning. And you see very little happening in the going out and training the farmers and actually teaching them how to use these inputs, teaching them and actually connecting their production to the markets. What we've been seeing in the last 5 to 10 years is a real emerging partnership model, which takes the entrepreneurs and the private sector, puts them as the lead change agent, connects them throughout the value chain, and solves this missing middle. So this is a bit of a complex slide, but just a way to talk through what has been happening and how we might be able to increase sustainability. So in many cases, what we have is we have the donor, let's say USAID or Gates Foundation, somebody that has funding. They either do it themselves or contract an implementing partner that goes out in the field and trains the farmers. And they say, you go out to, what we want to do, let's say, is develop a coffee value chain. So they go and they say, okay, implementing partner, you go and you develop, work with these farmers, help them learn how to grow coffee. And they give them money to do that. Then they simultaneously go to, let's say, Starbucks and say, Starbucks, we would really like you to buy this coffee if we get it up to quality. Starbucks says, sure, I need that production. I'd be more than happy to sign the contracts. You get it up to my quality, consider it sold. There may also be somebody providing financing to processors or other actors in the chain. The good news about this model is you know you're hitting the smallholders. You're going out to the people that are in need and you're helping them. The bad news is 3 to 5 years down the road, you still need more training for those smallholders. And you know, you might have new inputs, new models, and Starbucks is not in this chain. Starbucks is just the recipient, right? What you need to do is try to figure out a way to make Starbucks or the private sector actor actually engaged in the process. So the model that we will discuss today is thinking about how to make the private sector the aggregator. So the donor in this model goes directly to a Starbucks and says, what will it take for you to source from the smallholders? What will it take for you to go out and, you know, reach these people? And Starbucks says, well, the problem is the economics don't work because it's too expensive. They're so spread out. They don't know what they're doing. I don't have the money to do this, and it doesn't make sense for me. Well, what if you sat down with Starbucks and said, okay, what is the economic gap there? What needs to happen? How can we give you more training? How can we help you? But you have to lead it. And what we're seeing is that model is actually very interesting. Because what that means is that the private sector gets embedded in the value chain as someone who then trains up their own set of change agents, sends them out, trains the farmers 3 to 5 years once you get the production up to a reasonable level, the economics work, and Starbucks can do it on their own. The challenge is, as I mentioned earlier, we have to make sure that it reaches the right people. We have to make sure we don't just give money to Starbucks and then it doesn't get out to the most needy people. So there's monitoring issues, and there's also the issue that we have to make sure the economics actually do work, and 3 to 5 years down the road, it is sustainable. So this is just an example of the range of different players that can provide that private sector edge. So you could have an integrated service center. So a lot of times in countries, we've seen a group of people that sell inputs but also are willing to do training. How do we help them reach the smallholders? You've got input providers. Sometimes it's large structured nucleus farms, big farms that actually are more than willing to send their agents out to smaller farms and aggregate the production. You see wholesalers and traders. You often actually see cooperatives in certain countries where you have a well-formed and strong cooperative that actually can play this role. Again, whatever model you choose, the economics must work. And this sounds simplistic, but the fact is, many times in the social sector, there isn't the rigorous economic analysis that should happen. You don't. Nobody thinks about 3 years down the road, this is actually make sense, because it feels good to do it, people like it, it seems to be working, but is it sustainable? Is it going to happen on its own in the future? Well, here's an example of a private sector company that did this on their own. And the reason I like this is because it illustrates how big of a scale you can have. So this is in Kenya. Smallholders, as in most of these countries, had very limited economic opportunities, were very spread out, and really didn't know how to grow crops in an effective way, and didn't have access to high-quality inputs. Burgokin was the largest vegetable processor in Kenya. Happened to be led by a founder that cared deeply about engaging with smallholders, so decided to try to invest in sourcing from more needy populations. So they actually offered services, they sent out their trainers, they provided inputs, they signed contracts, and in the end, the farmers made 2 to 4 times as much income, and Fergokin grew from 50 to 35,000 smallholders between 95 and 2007. And the reason I like this is, again, it was done on its own. In this case, the impetus was the fact that Fergokin, the founder, was really, really dedicated and wanted to do something good. But what would it take to get more of these processors to play this role? What would it take to push them into actually reaching, you know, tens of thousands of smallholders on their own with very little social sector investment? In addition to the economics, again, one of the most important things is contracts and oversight. As you go from just doing offtake and market access contracts, and you go deeper into co-investment, where you're investing with the private sector, the contracts become more and more important. And this is a role the social sector can and should play. Either the social sector and the government, ideally together, need to be monitoring to make sure that these contracts are fulfilled in a way that benefits the small farmer. And depending on the type of contracts, the risks differ. But I think it's pretty evident that if you give a lot of money to a large nucleus farm, for example, it's absolutely critical that you make sure that the benefits are getting to the people who deserve them. The one more thing I'll mention today is the need for building entrepreneurs. A lot of government strategies depend on entrepreneurs in their country building small-scale businesses like processors, like input dealers, that can reach out to these small farmers. The problem is, it's not like we have a massive amount of qualified entrepreneurs sitting around waiting to be financed. In fact, we're having this challenge because a lot of financial institutions are looking to invest in agriculture and they can't find opportunities. One of the reasons is because we don't have qualified change agent entrepreneurs. A lot of smart and capable people, but they don't know how to run a warehouse, or they don't know how to run an input dealership. So how do you train them? Well, historically, we've seen a lot of traditional in-class training models, where they go into a classroom, learn about how to run a business, and then they leave. The problem is, adults don't learn this way. Very few adults actually retain information after just being trained in an in-class setting. In fact, most of the time, you see 10% recall after about 3 months. You also have a perception that's very scholar and theoretical. And we have seen very little impact on in-class training on a small and medium enterprise building. So there's two other things that we're testing out. One is a model factory. So in the cases that it works, can you build a warehouse or have the private sector invest in building one of their own warehouses that brings in the entrepreneurs and trains them, having them actually run it? The Moroccan government and McKinsey are working together to build a set of model factories which can train entrepreneurs in this way. The ninth thing about this is actually not that costly, because it's a business on its own. It can run. It's just much more about bringing people through practical hands-on training and to learn about how to run the business that you'd like them to be able to invest in. The other piece that we're working on is developing models of end-to-end support and training. And this is basically taking each individual entrepreneur, you know, yes, you use the in-classroom training, but you also take them around to different models. You link them to financing, you provide ongoing mentorship, and you make sure that they actually know what they're doing. So you link them with, say, somebody at Walmart that is their mentor that can make this happen. This is actually quite costly because it's very heavy on each person, but it actually is also very effective. So depending on if you're building if you're trying to build up entrepreneurs in very specific areas and you've got the private sector willing to train them, this might be a good model. This is just an example of the model factory that's being done in Morocco. The basic idea is, can you actually have people come in, be in the business, hear, see, and do it, deal with everyday problems, like understand what it really takes to run a business before you move to the, you know, financing and training part of the spectrum. So that's a little bit of a simplistic view, but those are the three things that I'm focused on right now, which is thinking about how to help private sector understand, private and social sector, understand the honest and accurate assessments of the economics, understanding contract management and oversight of these models, and thinking about innovative models for training entrepreneurs so that we have leaders who can make these models happen. The good news is it seems to be working, and we believe it can happen. The only caution is that you have to come at it from a, you really do have to come at it from a private sector point of view and make sure that it's sustainable. And that is it. Thank you.